we love the Song Dynasty, exploring the history and charm of one of China's most fascinating dynasties. Episode 13, The Pursuit of Vulgar Elegance. In the next few podcasts, we're going to be surveying the artistic temperament of the Song. What caused them to be so innovative and creative, and yet so insecure, and at times, vulgar? I'm Bob Jones, and in this Why We Love the Song Dynasty podcast, I'm throwing the spotlight on what was to become one of China's most iconic dynasties in the country's long and colorful history. In this stressful world of ours, we are always seeking peace of mind and enlightenment. The Song Dynasty was no different. As they perused the pick-and-mix stall of religion at the time, they were particularly attracted to the concept of Zen. Zen is what we are, our true nature expressing itself in the moment and what we do, actions which bring us joy and satisfaction at being. There is no dogma or doctrine. It is an attempt to appreciate the ultimate reality. At the time of the Song, equal stress was laid on ideal and reality, elegance and vulgarity. According to the Neo-Confucianists, our old friends Cheng Hao and Cheng Yi, everything has li or nature. For example, fire is hot, water is cold, inescapable attributes. Everything is connected by the same force, even people, the emperor and his ministers, and fathers and sons. Conceptually, people thought everything in the world has its cause and course. The force in the universe flows through everything all the time without being perceived. And so the literati, the educated classes of the Song, believed that everyday life, including all their activities, were interacting and interconnecting with each other.
Our Song poet Su Dongpo said,
"A poem must be written only after something happens. Use old episodes ingeniously and turn vulgarity into elegance."
Fellow master Huang Tingjian insisted that treat the vulgar as the elegant and the old as the new, and like the art of war, this will make you ever victorious. A quick explanation of that reference to the art of war.
This was a very famous treatise written about 1,500 years before the Song Dynasty.
It was written by the ancient Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. It is divided up into 13 chapters and actually still makes very good reading today, assuming, of course, that you plan to wage war in the near future. But it's also been embraced by the business world. It contains many aspects of warfare that are very relevant to today, such as the importance of strategy, weaponry, and espionage.
But let's get back to more aesthetic matters. Elegance and vulgarity are connected to one another, and so are poetry, calligraphy, and painting. Su Shi suggested that what poems cannot express may be denoted in calligraphic works or depicted in paintings. He wasn't fussy. His fellow Song master Huang Tingjian even connected the scenes of life to natural landscapes, saying that friendship is like a beautiful scene, and mountains and rivers are paintings of the Creator. Thanks to this worldview, that everything was worthy of art, we have a lot of artifacts to fall back on when understanding the Song Dynasty. In a sense, history and art collide here. Historians might look at a painting and see how people lived, what they wore, the activities carried out in daily life, etc. But where the artists score over them is seeing how these scenes were painted and what they meant about the mindset of the Song. Historians see works of art, paintings, calligraphy, and poetry as windows on a bygone world. Artists and art historians would open that window and have a conversation with the people depicted. As we heard in our podcast about calligraphy, art was often used to make a point, expose corruption, highlight social injustice, etc. Remember our painted scroll along the river during the Qingming Festival? But it could also work the other way, as a vehicle for propaganda. The Song Dynasty is known for the rise of court paintings, professional artists and literati drawings. Many paintings were intended to publicize political purposes, demonstrate imperial authority and social ranking, praise saintly virtues and highlight auspicious signs, and comment on current affairs. They reflect the then prevailing political situations and draw our attention to their efforts to guide public opinion and secure a vantage point in the field of culture. In addition to court or politics-related paintings, local officials in the Song Dynasty would use paintings to notify the public of something, a bit like social media. Scholars without an official position would use paintings to express opinions directly or indirectly. They were the earliest social media trolls, perhaps. They also highlighted activities such as painting, appreciating, gifting, and collecting, which together allowed them to establish and maintain an interpersonal network. How familiar does that sound to users of WeChat, Weibo, Facebook, and Twitter? So, if you look at any Song artwork, you have to appreciate the context, motive, and means. Think of it in terms of forensics or detecting a crime. Why did the artist choose this means of expression? Why did they choose this subject, and why at that time? Did the artist have a motive for doing so? Did they have the means? What about the opportunity? Who indeed was the victim? Whereas these days we'll often say that we look at or see a painting or other work of art, in Song times they would say that they viewed a scene. It was a carefully chosen word. In the Song Dynasty, it wasn't enough to just gaze or scrutinize a painting. No, it was important also to appreciate the world view that the painting represented and feel the sentiment and insight in the painting. For Song painters, their artistic, poetic, and mental conceptions were all connected and integrated. Simplicity is one of the key features of the art of the Song Dynasty. It was seen as beautiful. It was an attitude that went beyond the boundaries of art. In the Southern Song, affairs of state were beautiful if they were carried out in a simple way. But sometimes there also had to be an element of vulgarity. You might get a beautiful piece of porcelain, for example, with words added such as patience, filial son, or good wife. Imagine buying a souvenir from Beijing, a beautiful picture of the Forbidden City in the sunshine, for example, and then having the words "Bob was here" scrawled all over it. You know it happens. It's crude, but the Song liked this juxtaposition of beauty and the beast. And that was a reflection of Song society. The social environment was complicated and ever-changing. War and peace flip-flopped on a regular basis. Trouble alternated with prosperity and splendor. Peace and noise existed in the same space. Creators, artists, poets, calligraphers, respected the fact that life was a constant battle between composition and chaos, contentment and need, ideology and mindfulness, taste and tackiness. Art was elegant and vulgar at the same time. But each side had its place. There was no place for ugly complexity in statecraft, for example. But the old, the ugly, the brash and vulgar were always the building blocks of the new, fresh, beautiful and elegant. The past was a painter's palette. According to Han Biao, a poet who lived in the middle of the Southern Song Dynasty, elegance and vulgarity are not different, and have been the same since ancient times. That is, they can nourish and connect to each other. Elegance and vulgarity both brought new experience, interest, and vitality to literary circles and social life in the Song dynasty. This dichotomy also applied to the works produced by artists. For example, poet and military leader Xin Qi Ji would one day write a Spartan little poem. Drunken, look at the sword under the lamp, and awakened from a dream, bugles are sounding, beef handed out to subordinates, and martial music played, a military parade in the battlefield. But next day, he might write, low thatched houses, green grass along the stream, amusing in soft local accent. Who is that white-haired couple? Such contradictions in style weren't seen as odd in the Song dynasty. One style fed the other, prompting new ways of seeing things. This worldview explains a lot about the Song, how they could be so insecure and yet so prosperous, so artistic and yet so vacuous, fearful and yet too lazy to do anything about it. Have things changed much in 1,000 years? Maybe not. Special thanks go out to Sanlian Zhongdu for their help in creating the content for this show. This is Bob Jones. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time. This has been a China Plus podcast. If you like the show, please give us a rating and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen. If you've got any questions or feedback, please feel free to contact us via email at podcast@cri.com.cn or find us on Twitter, China Plus Pods.